Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks.
Hi, it's Ed Marks, and welcome to Digital Voices. I'm so excited that you're with us, and we have another amazing guest that I'll introduce to you in just a second. This time, we're really going to focus on digital voices, but from a digital native, meaning individuals, and in this case, Nick Sean, who grew up in the digital era, as opposed to perhaps some of us who are a little bit more mature and grew up in the analog world and then transitioned to digital. So that'll be really interesting. Plus, to hear about best practices from outside of healthcare, Nick will share with us some of his journey on the financial services investment side. So before we get there, I want to talk to you about one of the books that really changed my life. I don't want to overstate it. It sounds like pretty overstated, but it was really pretty significant. And it was called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. For those with a visual, I'm holding up one of the books in the series. This one's called Rich Kid, Smart Kid. Unfortunately, I didn't get to read it till I was in my 40s, but I vowed that I would share this with my children. And so that's indeed what I've done. And so today, what I'm going to share in with our guest is one of my kids. So this is blatant nepotism, but one of my five children. And he, Nick, really grabbed on to some of the theories in the book and made it his own and did a lot of amazing things for a young person in a short amount of time. So, Nick, welcome to the show, and we're very excited to have you. You know, I do this with all of our guests. I really have two standard questions in terms of trying to get to know you a little deeper for our audience. Who's your favorite band or song? What do you like to listen to?
So I like to listen to mainly instrumentals. I like anything calm. I'm like jazz, Christian hymns, and like oldies music's playing on repeat and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I'm into.
I remember when you first started producing vlogs that your music was always like really chill and jazz like that. And I really like a lot of that type of music. And in terms of your life message, like, you know, what are your passions? What is it, the one thing inside of you that you'd want everyone to know?
So I think if we're talking to like, you know, what is like our passion or like life message, mantra, something like that, I think I could pretty much sum it up in one statement on how I live. And that is focus on priorities and avoid distractions.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Something we can all learn from. And that's what, and obviously I'm biased as the dad, but I think our audience will come to find out in the next 25 minutes or so just how focused you are. And that's part of the reason for your amazing success. So let's jump right in. Tell us a little bit about your story, Nick, you know, growing up, both on the personal and professional side.
So I guess we could hit it off with the personal side here. I grew up in a tiny town in Texas. It's called Keene, Texas. Very small. The population at that time, I think, was like under 10,000. So it was a very tiny little out in the middle of nowhere town. I grew up there. I was blessed to have had an amazing childhood, an amazing parents, amazing influences. And I grew up there, and I graduated high school from a city called Keene, Texas. I then went to college at UT Arlington. I started out kind of wanting to do engineering. I switched my path there and changed it to nursing at one point. And then I switched it yet again and went into law enforcement. And then I just altogether dropped out of college at UT Arlington with two classes left to my bachelor's degree. I dropped out to pursue this little investing thing, which kind of leads me here into the next portion, which was, why did I get into investing? You see, I met this crazy person named Edward Marks, who became my bonus dad back in 2015. And I asked him, I was very inspired by Ed. I was inspired by your journey into how you created a life for yourself. And you created a whole bunch of success and prosperity. And most importantly, the happiness and passion in what you were doing for work. I loved that. And I loved that you could do that and make a lot of money at the same time. And so I met this guy, Ed Marks, who we're here on the podcast with. And then I asked you, I was like, hey, how did you do all this? And you gave me a couple tips of advice, and you also gave me two books to read. One of them, as you sort of touched on the beginning in your intro, was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, an amazing book, really shifted my perspective on money and financials. And also another book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which sort of helps you to understand people more and how to like reason with people and like work together. So those were great books, and that sort of changed my outlook. So in doing so, I ended up looking at a couple different things. I tried a few business models and college and stuff like that. I tried network marketing, a couple different perspectives, and I eventually stumbled upon investing. And so with investing, I thought, man, if I could just learn how to do this, I could have the rest of my life sorted out career-wise and income-wise and never have to worry about money again. And the most important thing I could obtain from this is freedom. And so I got more into that entrepreneur kind of like mindset. I worked on that for 2 years, and I eventually became successful in trading and investing. And then after about 3 years into that journey, I started a business teaching investing to others, the timeless principles to where people can build and then maintain consistent profitability investing in financial markets. And so pretty much since then, since all that stuff, that was maybe about 2.5 years ago, I've just chosen to just live life with a constant focus on perpetual improvement in my personal life and in my work life, and of course, family life with you guys as well. So that pretty much sums up everything from my life until now.
Yeah, no, that's a great, concise overview of your story. And yeah, for the audience that doesn't know, I was divorced in 2015 after 30 years of marriage. Is quite shocking to myself and I think everyone involved. But on the good side, on the bright side, it wasn't that much afterwards that I met my now current wife, Simran. We've been married for 5 years, and I did inherit 3 bonus children. Nick being one of them. We just talk about all of our kids together as our own. So we have 5 kids. Nick is right in the middle. And we're really, really super proud of Nick. And I think you probably already know why, but I think you'll be more impressed as we continue our dialogue. So you mentioned your business, how you got into investments and teaching investments. Can you share a little bit about how you leverage, because again, you're a digital native, you don't know any different, but how do you leverage digital in your business today?
So in my business and also in my personal investing and trading, I leverage digital in the entire essence of what digital means, in which my entire income relies on the presence of having a digital platform to conduct my business and also to do investing and trading. And so I'll start with the first one, because there's actually 2 of them. The first one is trading the financial markets online. I'm a big trader in primarily the foreign exchange currency market, and I also delve a little bit in stocks. I'm getting into cryptocurrency as well here shortly. And to do all of this, if you wanted to trade 20 to 30 years ago, you had to get a job at a central bank, and you had to become essentially like a banker or a trader or asset manager or hedge fund manager, and you had to call people up on the phone to get priced in on certain assets and figure out what the prices are to trade them. It was completely non-digital, like it didn't rely at all on the internet. In today's world, almost 100% of trading is done digitally. In fact, I don't personally know anybody who places trades over the phone anymore or in person at a scenario like going to an exchange counter at the bank or the airport. And so trading Forex online is the first way that I use digital, and I leverage that to run my business. And if we're going into a little bit more detail about that, I use computers, I use a variety of softwares to analyze markets and charts, and this all creates a ton of convenience for my business as far as like trading and investing. The second way that I leverage digital in my business is for my online company, Mission FX. And so for Mission FX, I leverage software. I leverage stuff like YouTube and Google ads for automated client acquisition. So finding clients online, a predictable way to get clients. And then also value delivery. I use a variety of different platforms online, different softwares to then deliver that value, to deliver that education and training to clients who are learning how to invest and trade. Also having a platform with the students community, using applications like Zoom and Google Voice and Google Hangouts for live sessions, Q&A sessions, even podcasts such as like we're doing right here. So you can have a variety of things digitally for value delivery, and also for customer service, right? We've got phone customer service, we've got support customer service via email, and everything is 100% remote. Me, all my employees, all my contractors and affiliates, we work 100% remote. We don't have a physical office or anything like that. So I'd say, how do I leverage digital in my business? I leverage it in every single possible way you could imagine, because it is 100% digital.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's one of the reasons for the amount of success that you've had so early. And it really makes me think, Nick, about how do we apply some of that same thinking? Because I'll just give you one really simple example. Until the pandemic, the thought of working remotely, I think one or two of your employees are international. They're not even on U.S. soil, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And that way you're able to find the best in the world and be part of your team. You're not limited by geography or brick and mortar. So it was almost heretical before COVID to suggest that your employees could work from home or remotely. And if they did, there was always this requirement that they still had to come in and quote unquote check in and be there physically present. So I recall one organization where I served that all the employees still had offices and they worked remotely, but because it was a split situation, it just made no sense. I think with COVID, I think we've overcome that sort of cultural legacy, but that's just one very simple example. You didn't even think twice about it. You're like, why would I make that brick and mortar investment? It wouldn't really add any value to the organization. Plus, I think it makes employees less productive because you're spending all this time driving instead of working. So let's now talk about healthcare. So part of the premise of our pod today is really what is transferable? What are best practices? We just talked about one just to get things kicked off, but you're very familiar with healthcare. So Simran, your mom, my wife, she's been a nurse for almost 30 years. She's getting her doctorate in nursing practice. And obviously, you know me, we've hung out quite a bit in the last 5-6 years. What do you think is transferable over to healthcare?
Okay, so I've thought about this, and there are some things we can start with saying that are not transferable. If we were doing a surgery outside of remote operations with robots and stuff, it's probably better if the doctor's here right in front of me doing my surgery, right? So there's a couple things that are not transferable. However, after doing a little bit more thinking and really trying to test the edges of the mold and the edges of the perimeter and like seeing what could be pioneered, the thing that I think is transferable to healthcare is value delivery. I think that to a degree, it's transferable to healthcare. And so some examples of these could be remotely serving patients. So things like checkups. Do I really need to go to a doctor to get checked for a cold? If I can give the doctor what my symptoms are, maybe the doctor can have a way of like testing my temperature remotely if there's some sort of physical thing I can connect to my phone to do that. And the doctor can then figure out maybe how they could diagnose me with something possibly, and then also prescribe something, and then I could maybe even get it shipped to my house or go to the pharmacy and pick it up, whatever I need to do. I think multiple things in terms of value delivery is transferable to that. So that's checkups. Another one is diagnosis, the prescription of solutions, whether the doctor could say, hey, you just need to lay down and get some rest, or you can, you know, you need this medication, we'll approve it, you'll do a remote signature, we'll ship it to you and have it delivered or something like that. It would require a lot of infrastructure, but I certainly think those types of things are transferable to healthcare, value delivery. Another thing here is apps and technology to allow self-service for clients. I think that a big portion and a big thing that also HCI and Tech Mahindra may be doing right now is getting apps and technology to allow clients to serve themselves. Clients and patients and customers rarely report anything negative if they're able to serve themselves. It removes a whole nother leg of work for the organization that's providing the service when customers, patients, and clients can just serve themselves. So if you have an app that reminds you like, hey, you're supposed to do a checkup here. Hey, you can get on a FaceTime call or something with your doctor. You can do a little bit of checkup. That completely eliminates the need to have to drive to a physical hospital and stuff. And it can also allow physicians and healthcare professionals to be more productive in their work by using apps and technology. And the last thing here, I guess I'll touch on is like an all-inclusive patient experience remotely where it's applicable. Imagine like going to the doctor before, we used to have to drive 45 minutes away from our hometown in Keene to the doctor, wait in a waiting room, sit there, get called to the doctor. And there's always, you know, he's always running late because there's always so much to do. This whole thing would take maybe like 4 to 5 hours, right? And it would typically mean we'd have to miss half or a whole day of school, things like that. So it really gets in the way. If we're able to deliver an all-inclusive patient experience remotely, provided that it's applicable, this could be shortened down to maybe a 30-minute thing that could take place over your phone or a Zoom call with a physician. Now, like I said, I don't think this is applicable to everywhere in healthcare, but I certainly think a lot of things in terms of value delivery is transferable to healthcare.
Yeah, those are great, great examples. I want to comment or dig in a little bit. It is astonishing to me, Nick, that the progress we made during COVID was quite extensive in terms of some of the things you mentioned in terms of the patient experience and doing things remotely in 30 minutes that would have normally taken a half or perhaps a full day. And so we saw a spike in what we would call virtual visits that went from less than 1% across all health systems to up to 80% for some, with a national average of around 50 to 60%. Depends on whose analytics you're looking at, but 50 to 60% seems to be a really good average of averages. Now, since we've gotten better at handling COVID, that percentage has gone down to under 20. And I'm a little bit beside myself to try to understand why would we allow those gains to retreat so fast back to the way things used to be. Now, my optimistic friends would say, look, Ed, even at 15%, that's 15 times more than it was in 2018. And that's a fair point. But still, we need to break this cultural phenomena that says it's okay to go drive somewhere, put yourself at risk, bad for the environment, wasted time, and sit in a waiting room. And for it was acceptable to sit there for a half hour, for an hour, then to have your 5 to 7 minutes with a clinician, and then sort of reverse some of those that process. And it's just, to me, it creates an opportunity for an entrepreneurial company, entrepreneurial leaders to exploit this and really move us further up that chain in terms of the adoption of these sort of virtual capabilities and thinking about patient experience. See, for you, you said all these things. It didn't require a lot of thought for you because, again, as a digital native, you sort of, you don't know a different way, although you did as a kid, you know, in terms of the process that we're just talking about. But anyways, that's what really jumps out at me when you share some of the things that can be done. And did you find any resistance? Like when you're doing everything digital, did you find resistance of any way from maybe customers or market segments that you wanted to get into, but just weren't ready for doing everything online? Do you have any sense about that and what you did to overcome it?
I'm not so sure. And I think this would be very similar to asking somebody who's lived here on Earth their whole life if they like the climate of Mars. It's kind of a weird, unique question because it's not something I've never experienced brick and mortar. I've never experienced anything but digital, right? So I'm just 25 years old. I've grown up when I was getting started being an entrepreneur about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I was around 20 years old. It's never been anything but digital. And so I think it's a very difficult question to answer. I've never myself personally experienced any resistance or friction in terms of like a business model that relied on brick and mortar as opposed to digital. So for me, it hasn't been an issue, but it's definitely certainly a question that I think should be asked to companies that are brick and mortar, such as like healthcare organizations that still need a physical location to deliver value to their clients, but who can still transition in the direction of offering a lot of their services and value delivery in terms of healthcare online digitally.
Yeah, so let's continue down that path. So let's say you are now hired as the CEO of a healthcare, like a hospital, a health system, and you're coming in as a complete digital native, not knowing any different. So what might be some, and so you understand that probably 70, 80% of your workforce are not digital natives. And the same could be said reflective of the broader patient population. So what might be a few of your first steps that you might take if you were suddenly brought in as a CEO?
So if I was suddenly just thrown in as a CEO of a huge healthcare organization or something like that, I think what I would do is I would first take some time to understand the business model. What are we trying to do? What is the goal of a corporation that serves like healthcare to patients? And I would take a lot of time to understand what we're trying to offer and the different methods and things that we can do to offer those services and offer that value to our patients. And then after I've taken some time to understand the business model and familiarize myself with that, I would then go about identifying every single thing that can be done virtually without a loss in the quality of patient care. So that would be my first thing I'd do is I'd understand it. Then I'd go and try to figure out, all right, what can we do that virtually and digitally without sacrificing the quality of patient care. And I'd look at those things. And then after I've done that, I would go about organizing teams, some highly skilled, highly talented people, to go about analyzing, planning, and implementing virtual healthcare solutions using digital systems that comprehensively serve the patient's needs completely remote. And I think that would cut a lot of bulk. I think it would save a lot of time, really optimize a lot of things, and lower a lot of costs. And the one of the last things I'd do is then after doing this, after give it like 6 to 12 months, I would evaluate the progress and the performance of these solutions as they begin implementation. And then I would optimize as necessary. And I think the most important thing here would be after analyzing all this, after seeing what we're doing and whether or not it's working or not, I would focus on perpetual improvement using the patient feedback as the compass. Are we able to successfully serve our patients? Are they getting good results, like in terms of healthcare? And is everything working well? And I would use that patient feedback as the compass to decide what we should continue doing virtually and what we should not.
No, those are really good ideas. And Nick, it's not that far fetch that you could someday suddenly become a CEO. There's a great TV show on Apple TV called Ted Lasso about this coach of, I think it was a basketball coach, and suddenly gets hired to coach a Premier League soccer team in England. And it's quite hilarious, but there's a lot of leadership lessons in that show actually. And one of them is just that it's not about that specific experience that you might have, but it's the principles that are transferable. And what you just shared, and I'm sure my listeners who are largely in the digital space across payers and providers and pharma and biotech, I'm sure that's something that resonates with them because these principles are transferable into these areas. Yeah, and what I was saying was, you know, some of them that you mentioned were really the bias for action. You just got to take action and then you optimize, you iterate. It's sometimes known as agile. You take the patient experience point of view as your driver and compass because our patients are so adept at using digital in other industries that they can provide a great compass. And finally, one of my takeaways here is that you should put on the perspective of a digital native. So if you're not a digital native like myself, you need to start thinking like one. And I think you'll find a lot of opportunities for improvement and to digitize and improve the experience for everyone involved, not just the patients, but also the clinicians. Because we're so used to seeing things a certain way, it's hard for us to step out, but you need to. And then to supplement that is to hire for diversity in all of its manifestations. And one of those is digital natives. So I think sometimes in healthcare, another thing, Nick, that we struggle with is we only want to hire people who have 10, 15, 20 years of experience. Well, think about that from a digital native experience, from a digital native recruitment. You couldn't hire a digital native if you insisted they had 20 years of experience and a college degree. So right there, you're saying they're 45 years old already. And so you're not going to get that. So we really need to change the way that we look at recruitment. So that brings me to a off topic, but I think people will wonder, Nick, and I know you'll have a good answer, is education. What can we do in education? So you spent 4 years at the university. You decided two classes shy of graduation to move on and start your investment firm. And what if you had something to share with educators, because there's also educators that are part of our audience, what would that be? What does education need to be doing differently to sort of up their game when it comes to digital?
So I think what education could have done differently, and like as of right now, I think I could sum it up in one word, and that one word is targeting. If you are trying to learn information in today's world in which you can hop on your phone or on the internet and go to google.com and search and learn exactly about whatever it is you're looking for, that is targeted information. And that is tons and tons of targeted information specifically based around exactly what you're trying to learn. I don't have any formal training or education in financial services. I don't have any formal education in running a business. I don't have any formal education in really anything that I'm currently doing right now as of a couple of years ago. I learned it all myself and I learned it all online, the majority of it for free. And so I think that what education could be doing differently right now is allowing to have a more tailored, targeted learning experience for people who are trying to learn a specific skill set that can then take that skill set and come to a company, whether it's a financial services organization or whether it's a healthcare organization, and they can learn the specific targeted actual skills that they need to perform their job very well. I'm all for a rounded education, but one thing I still don't understand is why in colleges, I was wanting to be a police officer, but I needed to have a music appreciation class to go and get a degree in criminal justice to be a police officer. I totally appreciate having a rounded experience. I totally understand that. However, I think in today's world, especially at the pace we're moving on the frontier of digital and everything continuing to get more and more unique and complex and digitized and whatever, I think that people need to be learning these targeted skills so that way they can bring value to companies like healthcare organizations and financial services and whatever else it may be. So that's how I'd sum it up. I think that the education should be more targeted. That's what I think.
No, that's a really good point. I'm sure our audience appreciates that. And I'm just struck, Nick, well, one is this conversation has ended way too soon. It's amazing how fast the time goes by. We could talk forever, and thankfully I can talk with you forever because you're my son. So I have that benefit. But that's one thing I want to encourage the audience. You know, sometimes people ask me, Ed, you're not a digital native. How come you seem to be, you know, maybe I'll just say a little bit above average in terms of understanding digital? And really it's two things, and these are, and one of them is something that anyone can do. One is I've been very fortunate to have incredibly bright children, and I've learned from my children. I got involved, I was an early adopter of MySpace and Facebook and then Twitter and all the different social media platforms because I was checking in on my kids. My kids would be talking about it, Nick would be talking about it, and I would learn. And so that's sort of how I kept up over the years and stayed ahead and then thought about how do I apply this. Now, if you're not in the same situation, your kids are older, you don't have kids, whatever the situation might be, the other thing I've done in my career is have a reverse mentor. So in a sense, Nick and Austin as well, some of my other kids, they mentor me. It doesn't have to be your kid though. So you could identify someone who's a digital native in your organization or outside your organization and set up the same sort of mentoring that you're probably doing for other people. So a lot of times we only think of mentoring as in one direction, like a young person needing quote unquote an older person to help them show the way in different areas. In the case of digital, I really encourage anyone who doesn't have a mentor or needs to sort of stay abreast of all things digital, have a reverse mentor. Find someone younger that you respect and spend time with them, ask them questions, formalize this relationship. So that's just a practical thing that I would offer as well. And Nick, we're down to, you know, the last 60 seconds. I know we touched on a lot of areas, financials, your journey, digital in healthcare, what you do in healthcare, a lot of different things. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to share with the audience?
I guess I'll say one thing here is that, like, let's say, because most of this audience here is like healthcare and the digital space and stuff like that, I would say never be afraid to experiment. Let your curiosity be your compass and never be afraid to go about inventing things on your patient's behalf to try to make their experience better. And do that in the context of digital. Do that in the context of asking, how can I make the virtual experience better? What can we do virtually that could be done just as well virtually as compared to in person? I think that would be a big thing that I'd sort of say. Never be afraid to experiment.
Love it. And Nick, you're awesome. I don't say that just because you're my son, but you are awesome son as well as a very insightful leader and leader of your generation. And you're going to be doing more amazing things. I want to thank you for being here. And then just remind our audience that you can ask questions that we will answer live. You can send your voice recorded questions to questions@thehcigroup.com. We will pick one at random each episode and answer them live on the air. So that will be in our show notes in case you missed the email address, but we look forward to continued interaction with our audience. And again, thank you, Nick, for being part of this pod.
No problem. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Marks. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.